हरि ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्वमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 8. Thus the creation of the jivas is figurative only. Because the senses are material, their creation is literal. The sages and the Puranas mention the quotation from Saptapada Brahmana actually mean the Lord. This is so because both these words are names of the all-knowing Supreme Person. The word Rishaya, sages, indicates someone with all knowledge, and prana refers to one who gives life. Footnote 1. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura proves that all the senses have their origin in the Supreme Lord. Indriyani tad vishayas taj jata bhavas cha manasa saha prakritas cha upa di dvaj janayat vach cha. The senses and mind, what they perceive, and the results produced by their acts of perception are all material. For these are all created within the material world, and they are the result of the soul's misidentifying itself as a material body. The word indriyani here refers to both the knowledge-acquiring senses and the working senses. What the knowledge-acquiring senses perceive is form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. What the working senses do is the five actions, which begin with walking. The results produced by their acts of perception are the mind's activity of accepting some things and rejecting others. All these are material, for they are all created within the material world. They are all a result of the soul's misidentifying itself as a material body. In the Upanishads it is said, evam etasmad atmana sarve prana sarvendriyaniti tatmanos sri jata. From the Supreme, all the life airs and all the senses were created. Thus he created the mind. In the Katha Upanishad 2.3, 7-8, it is said, indriyebhya para hyarta artebhyas cha param manaha. Manasas tu para buddhir, buddhir atma mahan paraha. Higher than the senses are the sense objects. Higher than the sense objects is the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. Higher than the intelligence, the soul. Higher than the soul is the mahatattva. Mahata param avyaktam avyakta purusha para. Purusham na param kinchit. Sakasta saparagatihi. Higher than the Mahatattva is the unmanifested. Higher than the unmanifested is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nothing is higher than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the highest. He is the supreme destination. Tattva Sutra 3:30. Yes, so everything's going back to the Lord, everything's working on. So at all the levels that are there, in the original, the metaphysical that's there, the subtle, the gross, it's all Krishna's potencies. He's the one that knows, he's the one that gives life, he's the one that makes it all work. Right? So then when we're talking about these things, we're talking about it's the Lord. And then the jiva can take part as an instrument. Right? And the material energy is an instrument also, but it is unconscious. So even though the power of the Lord's there, this transformation, the material energy itself is unconscious. Well, the jiva can take part in that, though they don't transform. But because of their identification with it, therefore, then all the problems come up, because they identify with the senses than the mind. Therefore, then anything that comes from that gives them trouble. Right? When one gives that up and just sees everything as how it's working in context with the Lord, then there's no problems. Right? So Bhagavatam, yes.
Why is it mentioned here that the Mahatattva is higher than the soul?
That's probably meaning the conditioned soul. Because the conditioned soul, the conditioned consciousness, because they're identified with the polluted consciousness. And so in that polluted consciousness, that's controlled by the three kinds of ignorance. Right? And goodness, passion, ignorance.
Yeah.
So that means that Mahatattva is controlling them. But above that, then, is the avyakta, the unmanifest. Because that's the origin of all these ingredients and positions, are combinations of the ingredients in which then you can apply your desire to control and enjoy. Right? But that's all coming from the Lord. So you always have to take the position that there is a definition. And then in line with that definition, that's how then you understand things. Right? You know, it's just like in the Bhagavatam, the Paribhasha Sutra. Then Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. So all other verses you see in that context. Right? So for us, we've been given the Dasamu, we know the definition, so we'll always interpret according to that. Does that make sense? Others may interpret in different ways. They have a different purpose, so therefore a different philosophy. Because it's not what you're working with, it's your purpose. Just like, you know, it's saying, the senses, all the actions they perform, everything they do, it's all material. Right? And so that's literal. That's what you're dealing with. You're dealing with material energy and interacting with material energy. Right? But why is someone doing that? Why are we engaging the senses? Right? Because there's a goal. So if that goal is spiritual, you know, to please Krishna, then we consider the activity spiritual. But if the goal is material, then the activity is considered material. So it's not that there's action being performed with material energy that makes it material. It's what purpose you want from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, let us say we're performing the material activities that are recommended by Shastra. And so I'm performing them for the benefits I'll get from that. So then that's defined as material activity. That'll be karma or jnana, right? But now if I'm doing those same activities to please the Lord, it'll be called sadhana bhakti. The activities don't change. If you're following what's recommended by Shastra, if you're doing something that's not recommended, then, you know, naturally you would change it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's where it makes the difference. Because there's always this confusion at this point. Because we're looking at, no, but the activity itself, it's the same as that activity. But you have to see what's the goal of it. What's the intent? Now, one may say is, okay, we have the smartas and that, they're following the Vedic recommendations like we are, and they're worshipping the Lord, they're chanting their mantras, they're worshipping the Lord, they're doing, you know, all these different aspects, making their offerings, doing all that. But, so you could say, so then is that devotion? Because they're doing it with devotion and everything, so do we call this sadhana bhakti? But we don't. Why? Because their goal is not to please the Lord. It's that only by worshipping the Lord you can get your particular benefits. That's why they're worshipping the Lord. Does that make sense? So, the Lord is, in the process, the worship of the Lord and all that, it's just one of the rules in all so many rules that they have. Right? All the secondary rules, for them, worship of the Lord is a secondary rule. But for the devotees, then worship of the Lord, that's the primary. And that commitment to serving the Lord is an eternal position. Right? It doesn't change when you get the results of that endeavor. Therefore, it's called bhakti. Right? So it's very important to understand that. Otherwise, sometimes we'll see, you know, the yogis, they also do what we do, so then, you know, they're the same as us. You know, like this. Or the scholars, then they have so many things that are in common, so they're the same. No. Their motive is different, that's why it's different. You know, you're saying the scholar is studying the sandarbhas, but their goal is not to understand and apply the sandarbhas in their life to please the Lord. Their goal is just as interesting. That, you know, how you say Sanskrit is interesting. The technicality of it, the level, the fineness of the discussions and the analysis. So for their particular intelligence, they like it. So for them, they'll be sitting around, you know, with other academics down at the pub, drinking a beer and talking about some technical point with Jiva Goswami and what each one of them thinks. So it has nothing to do with bhakti, even though it's the same thing. So that's what's important, is that we understand that service to Krishna, Krishna being the primary point of all endeavors, and everything else is secondary to that. Then we see that's what's devotional service, not the secondary. Yes?
We see that in the long run, all the practicing devotees, they will agree that our goal is to please Krishna and
yes.
devotional service.
Yes.
But while we do the daily activities,
yes,
there's so many things involved.
Yes.
Can we point that the main goal is to please Krishna and all the secondary just, you know, it's due to habits and everything?
Yes, but, yes. Means it'll be due to habit, but it's also the more they're conscious of it, then it starts to also take part in the devotional process. Otherwise, it's just being dragged along. Right? So, and then being aware, then they can decide if what they're doing is actually, you know, the best situation. Right? You know, because it may be found that the activity that they're performing, that's what they do by habit. But there would be some other activity that might actually be more favorable to devotional service, some other secondary performance. But they're just used to doing it in that way, so that's why they do it. You know, it's just like, let's say, when you sit down on the couch. Now, there'll be some who, as a typical, active, when they sit down on the couch, they lean back and put their feet up on the coffee table. Right? So, it's generally accepted by all the men of the Western culture, but generally most women don't like it. Like that. Does that make sense? So, now, one may be doing that out of habit and saying that that's what you do, but then there's the element of that, well, if this coffee table is there, it's elevated, what's the point? So, why have the coffee table? And, you know, because if you're just going to put your feet on it, coffee tables aren't actually very comfortable. Right? I think, what do they call it?
Puff.
A puff.
A puff.
No, it's
poof. A poof. A poofy puff. Or a puffy poof. Like that. We had some other name, or Devon or something.
That is a big one.
Oh, that is a bigger one. Okay, so it's just a smaller one. So it's a
that's exactly poof.
Okay.
Because of those with the
bigger ones. Okay, those are bigger ones. Yeah. So then you get one of those, because the point is if you put your feet up on it, it's not clean. So therefore, you know, you couldn't put a book there. You couldn't put, you know, prasad there. Because then you might as well not have it. Just put it on the floor. What's the problem? Right? Getting
sit
arguments.
On huh?
Yeah, and then you can just sit on the floor. Yeah, so. Yeah, because if you sit on the floor, then you can stretch your feet out, and like, there's no problem. Okay. So, why did we get into this?
What's the better thing to do?
Oh, yes. And so then what I might consider is that, and considering that pleasing Krishna, maintaining the purity and the purpose of something that lifts things off the floor, you know, its purpose, therefore, then you wouldn't put your feet there. Right? And if you do want to put your feet, then you make some other arrangements. You get one of those couches that has that little extension, or, you know, you do something else. So you start adjusting your lifestyle. That's the problem. So you don't have to change what you're doing, you change the consciousness. You change the consciousness, whatever needs to be changed, you will. And whatever doesn't, you just leave. So that's why the recommendation of Shastra, the advantage is you don't have to change it as you become Krishna conscious. You know, it means what's recommended in the Shastra and recommended by the Acharyas. But if you're using other things, what's, you know, what's recommended in the Shastras but not by the Acharyas, or is not recommended in the Shastras or by the Acharyas, then that you may find you need to change as you go along. You see? So the things itself, the activities itself, the results you gain from all that, that's not what defines it as material or spiritual. It's what's the purpose of doing that whole thing. Right? Why you're doing that. If it's for material benefit, it's material. If it's for pleasing Krishna, it's spiritual.
Can you say that the position of material energy is neutral? Because then what is the purpose we are using? That determines.
Yes, the material energy is neutral. Because it's Krishna's energy, it's Brahman. So it's not that it's for one thing or the other.
If we do anything to please Krishna, that means to please devotee. That means also we do it for to please Krishna.
Depends, why do you want to please the devotee?
Right.
Why would you want to please the devotee?
Okay.
You understand?
To receive some benefits.
Yes, then it becomes, then it's you're serving Vaishnavas, but because you want a material benefit from it, it'll be mixed. Because serving devotees is a spiritual activity, because it's pleasing to Krishna. But you want a material benefit from that service, so you get a mixed result. So you'll advance in devotional service because of that one side, but that particular material facility you're looking for, and then the trouble that comes along with it, the happiness and the stress, then that will come also. You understand? Well, if it's just the devotional service to please Krishna, then the facilities that come along will also naturally be facilities for performing future service. Right? So facilities are there. Does that make sense? So in other words, the karmis and jnanis, they perform religious activities for the specific benefit they'll get. So it's limited in what they're dealing with. The devotees will perform the same activity to please Krishna. So that means they're functioning on a higher level. So devotional service already includes whatever you get in karma and jnana. That's why it's recommended you perform certain activities. But it's not about that. It's just that you have facility for, you'll get more of that facility. But if it's material, then you just get more material facility. So the problem is you do material activities, you get material facility, you get more entangled. You perform spiritual activities, you get spiritual facilities, you get less entangled. So, Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10:15. From the sky situated within the transcendental body of the manifesting Mahavishnu, sense energy, mental force, and bodily strength are all generated, as well as the sum total of the fountainhead of the total living force. Footnote 2. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur comments. From the ether within the body of the universal form, who is acting in various ways, arose the shaktis of the senses, Oja, the mind, Saha, and the body, Balam. From the subtle form of these three shaktis arose the best life air, the manifester of life, Asu, called Sutra, Prana. Sardarta Darshani 2:10:15. So it's also known as Sutra, because then it's all about, you know, being alive. So, sorry?
Multiple definitions we have for sutra. Depending,
yes, no, so many. But basically the point is sutra means its essence. Right? So the Mahatattva is known as essence because it's all about how I can control and enjoy the material nature. So this also then is sutra, because it's all about life, manifester of life. Means the jiva being in the body is very pleased if the symptoms of life continue in the present body that they're in. Right? You know, it's just a pretty standard kind of expectation. So, you know. So that's therefore sutra. Right? Yeah, here also is, here you have the ojas, So we see is that's different from the life force. And then you have the ojas, then you have the mind, the body, what's in there. So the ojas is that, that shakti of the senses.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sutra 242. Purva paksha. But that cannot be, since the words prana and rishaya, sages, are both in the plural. It's not possible they can here be names of the Supreme Personality. It's not possible that they can here be names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Sutrakar answers the objection as follows. Gonyasam bhavat, goni, secondary meaning, asambhavat, because of impossibility. The plural is figurative, since only the Lord existed. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar explains that the plural used is symbolic, since before creation nothing existed except the Lord. However, the plural can still be applied to him because of his countless manifestations. Right? So they're using in the sense that he's from before, so using that as he's everything. Right? But you can also look at it that he has unlimited manifestations, so in that way he can be plural. Right? Further, yes.
Can we say that basically to accept whatever the posture says, first you have to have faith?
Yes.
Because it sounds logical to us, but it doesn't sound logical to
And why body. Doesn't it sound logical to them?
Because they don't have faith.
They don't have faith. But it's not that they can function without faith. They just when we say faith, we mean faith in the Lord. Their faith is in something material. They have faith that if they get material facility, they will enjoy. Or they have faith if they give up all material, facility endeavor and identity, then they'll enjoy. You know, like that. So faith is always there. It's just in what? So that's why Prabhupada mentions that when that faith is in something sublime, that's what we're talking about. So it's revealed. See, the other is, it's still revealed, but they're working within the mundane platform. They work, let's say, within intelligence and apply themselves properly. Then they gain some ability within intelligence to perceive. And so then that logic that they use at their level, then they'll consider that superior to lesser forms of logic that others will use. Okay? So their mechanics of logic develop, and they have faith in those mechanics. But with the devotees, that whether you appreciate the mechanics or not, you can have the faith. And having that faith, you can actually understand things, whether you know all the technical mechanics or not. Right? So devotees have faith in Krishna consciousness without having all this technical knowledge of, you know, this analysis here. And that faith can develop as long as they stick to, you know, the process as given. But if they're not so careful, and they may unknowingly or knowingly accept certain premises that are held by those within the processes of karma and jnana, then they can be deviated. So then this kind of analysis is for rooting out that kind of positions. Because otherwise then it becomes one faith against another, and so then it's all considered equal. But there is no equality between spiritual faith and mundane faith. It all comes from the Lord, and it all comes in the area you work in. But that's like saying aluminum's a metal and gold's a metal, so therefore they're equal. There's no question of them being equal. Right? Everything has its position, like that. But it's about the particular how you're seeing it in connection with the Lord. Is the identity in connection with the Lord, or is the identity separate?
So that's the main problem when devotees become scholars?
Yes, is that they've cultivated their mundane scholarship. Because what does it take? Means, let's say, just to be, you know, kind of, you know, a good average. You need to put in 10 hours a day for 4 years to pass get your bachelor's degree. Okay? Now, that 10 hours is not coming out of their eating and sleeping. Right? And there's a good chance it's also not coming out of their time on the internet. So where is it coming out of? They're coming as sadhana. Now, they may chant their rounds, do that, do some basic programs, but do they do any other service other than that? So therefore, and then what's the motive in getting it? It depends on the individual. But if it's a matter of, well, you have this, then you have the prestige, then you can preach. It's like, who cares? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, how does the man on the street care that you are, and that, you know, you have an academic degree? Right? When you walk down the street, you meet somebody, the first thing you do is not ask them their academic degree. Right? Because we're dealing with Western culture, you're trying to be more equal. So you don't do that. But you see, like in India, Japan, some of these others, they do ask questions like that to see which position each other's in. The India guy, you know, where are you from? You know, what's this? You know, so they'll get back and basically figure out where you fit in the community and where they fit. And so therefore, what's your relationship? You know what I'm saying? So like that. So they're not, it's not using, so how does it help in the preaching? We say, oh, then we can make inroads into the academic area. It's like, how does that work? Because it's all it's by their definition objective. So you can't have, by their definition, a subjective perspective of devotion. It's illegal. So it won't be accepted by anybody who's identifying as an academic. So how does that help? You know what I'm saying? So there is no basis for it. If you need degrees, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur established degrees and positions and that. And so his devotees would go out and they would introduce themselves with those initials after their name, but their names, their positions that are based on devotional service. They didn't go out and get a karmic degree to have those titles. He didn't say, but it's not recognized, but it's like, why are the modern academic degrees recognized? They're recognized by those in those fields. But outside those fields, most people don't really care. Because they know that an academic in the field doesn't know anything. You know, it's just like this. Who would you want to, if you had to do some legal work, you know, in the court? Do you want a lawyer or someone who has a PhD in law? A lawyer. Because a PhD in law cannot go into the court. He has zero standing. You know, probably the bailiff has more weight than he does. He's the guy that says, all rise, you know, when the judge comes in. And if you get out of hand, he'll come over and put you in handcuffs. So he has way more influence. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that there's this idea that, so amongst the academy itself, they all have agreed to accept each other. But only to a certain degree, because if you have a degree from one university, if you go to a different university, it's up to them whether they want to accept it or not. So it's not a university. You know, we say, it's university. No, it's not. You know, you're a doctor in India, you go to America, you have to go through, you have to train again. It's not that you're automatically a doctor. You know? You know?
I think India to America it might work, but America to
India, no.
I'm not sure.
No, so many times they said that guys here that go and study, let's say, in Kazakhstan, like that, you know, we'd probably give it more weight India than Kazakhstan, right? But the funny part is that for India it's a foreign degree. So therefore they're in a better position than if they got their degree locally. So it's just social acceptance. It's not actual real, but they're trying to say that this is real intellectual, this is real. They've only decided, if you study 20 novels in 3 months, right? 2 classes a week, right? So now somehow or another you're a scholar in these 20 books? You know, it's kind of like, they've accepted that is. You know, we'd rather study one book, Bhagavad Gita, for 3 months. Then we'll say you know something. But they'll say, oh, it's only one book. So it's just a matter of perception. So it's not actually real. But people accept it as real. They have the faith that it's real. And so amongst themselves, it's real. You know, it's just like I remember seeing this small group, about five or six ladies. You know, and they're, you know, how you say, you know, kind of older, not completely, you know, how you say, you know, old enough. So they were Indians, they were in the West, living in the West. You know, they had probably been there forever, you know. They had their own idea of what it meant to be Western. How you dress, how you cut your hair, what kind of jewelry you wear, and all this. And they won't follow the Vedic, because we're in the West, we have to do the Western stuff. But how they dress, act, talk, and look, no one in the West would do. I mean, it just doesn't happen. So they, and amongst themselves, they support each other, that what they're doing is the real thing, and they harass everybody else in their family for not doing it. So, but it has nothing to do. So that's what we're dealing with, is that Krishna says in the Gita, when you have faith in something material, Krishna, he himself is the one that gives you that confidence in that faith. You want that faith, he'll give you in that. So it's still all coming from Krishna. That's the common point. But the point is the end result you get from material faith and from spiritual faith are exactly opposite. So in that way, then we don't. The only thing we can comment is Krishna's in control of the material world. That's what we're establishing here. But to be able to understand the difference here of what you're dealing with, then that's very important. So we generally tend to not analyze that far. But if you have faith in Krishna, you're committed there, you'll understand this, though you may not understand the mechanics of it. But there's no need, because you don't have to use the mechanics. You know, it's just like if you go and you get in your car and it works, you don't need to take it to the shop. But if it doesn't work, it goes to the shop. Or you need something more technical, more mechanical. So if you understand the philosophy, there's something wrong there, so you're opposed to the actual natural positions given by the acharyas in scripture. Therefore, the mechanics of this kind of logic is useful. So the study of this, we can use it in our own life for anything that we find is not necessarily spiritual, and we can help others in theirs if it comes up. But if it can be taken care of simply, you don't need the mechanics. So if people just always use the mechanics, that becomes scholarship. Mm-hmm. Right? It's when you use it at the right time, at the right place. You know, it's just like how you say, your typical, I think, you know, the first option in let's say if you have a motor or something that's not running. Right? So then the first option is you take that big wrench and you hit the motor. Then if it starts running, you're done. But if not, then you'll adjust the wrench and actually start using it like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the... Yes. No? No. Yes, yes. Yes.
In the Indian history, can we know where the Vedic education has been lost?
I mean, it's being lost all along in the Kali Yuga, because you see, is that with Duryodhana and the battle of Kurukshetra, that, you know, it's very much about position and facility and all that. Though he has the Vedic knowledge in the Vedic technique. And so, being a king and doing his things like that, he knows that quite well. But he doesn't know the purpose of it, so therefore it's purely material. It becomes selfish. So then you see that it becomes more and more selfish that Buddha has to come along. Right? And then like this, then the Mayavadis, you know, then come in afterwards, and then it's brought back into the Vaishnavism. So, you have one aspect where it's, you know, it's being corrected. But you could also say is that when those from India stop using, basically you could say is as they stop using Varnashram, that's where you see the problems come in. As long as they use it, it's strong. Because then you can actually give direction in that to others. But if stop using it, then you lose that. So then there'll be some influence when, you know, means just a little bit of the influence anyway from Kali Yuga. But then when you see that the moguls come in, then there'll be a more of an emphasis on not using it. Because depending upon the particular quote-unquote preaching methods of these, you know, the six mogul emperors, then they may appreciate or not appreciate the local practices. And then you know, that will have its effect. Then when the British came, it'll have a little bit more of effect. But probably you could say the biggest effect would have come, I mean, the very big effect would have come in the early 1800s, when the British decided, you know, from so many years, like 50 years or more of trying to control India, and they could, you know, let's say economically control, but socially they couldn't control. So they understood it's because they have their own education. Well, if they study our education, then they'll be like us, we can control them. What they misjudged is that the Indian ability is way better than the Western. So if you have an Indian with that Western knowledge, they'll be better at it than the Westerner. That they didn't calculate. So then they didn't have the facility to educate everybody, because their schools only educated the British. So they invited individuals from, you know, the prominent families, you know, the, like this, the aristocratic families, intellectual families like that, that they could come and study in their schools. And so by coming to the school after 20 years, then they had that education. Then having gotten that education and all that, now, yes, they started to think more like the Western thought. That's where you see a major element come in. But the difficulty, it backfired on the British, because then, you know, because the West is all about independence. So then before that, because in the Vedic, it's that you follow authority. So whoever's the administrator, you follow them. But by studying from the Western history is that you revolt. You know, just look at, you know, what happened to, in England. Right, you know, they revolted against the monarchy and all that, and so it's just so. Then they started the Swaraj movement, you know, for independence, and it took 100 years, you know, like that. But we eventually got it. Then with independence, then even more went down, because now they have to, now they're Indians, but they want to do the Western thing in their own way, you know, like that. And then you could probably say with Star TV, it came in the mid-90s, then there was a big drop in following the culture. And then probably with the internet being really well established. Mm-hmm. So just like this, it just has its effect. So what happens is it's not that they're using these things. It's that in using them, they give up their own culture. So that's the whole point. They don't follow Varnashram. Because Varnashram is the sattvic system for human beings. It's how humans should work. Like that. So if they do that, then they're very strong. As they give it up, then they become weak. You know. Then it's just like everybody else. So if they're worried about science, Varnashram is scientific. The modern social systems aren't scientific. They analyze what's there. You know, it's just like English grammar. There is no grammar. They analyze how it's being used and then apply a grammar. That's how it works. You don't like that. Like that. So that's what's going on. It doesn't have a grammar, because it's a mixed mishmash of so many things. So how can you say, is khichdi rice? Is it dal? Is it sabji? It's something else. You know what I'm saying? French has a grammar, and you can refer to the grammar about what's actually proper. English you can say, but that's how people use it. After 5 years, people don't use it that way. You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulties.
With the internet and messages, sign language.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's even just satellite to see. Yeah, back to yeah, on the caves. Yeah, back to the Neanderthal method. You know,
emojis.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing, is actually they're looking at it that they were behind with all the pictoglyphics, but actually they were on the cutting edge. That was just, you know, early emojis. You know, I feel like that one you sent, that was what do you call it? Moses was the first one to download, information onto a tablet.
From the cloud.
On the cloud, yeah, from the cloud onto a tablet, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, these things have always been there. Yes, they're all on the cutting edge. That's why they still talk about Moses, right? Yes.
The difficulty nowadays in any kind of education seems to be is that the Vedic tradition, it's a hearing tradition, but now everything has to be visual. People actually don't understand unless you show it to them.
Yes, but you can convert the what's heard individually, like Prabhupada when he was going to somewhere in the Orient. I don't know if it was Japan or if it was China or someplace. So then he wanted to prepare something that would be specific for them. So then that's when he put together that chapter on Light of the Bhagavad. Yes. Yeah, it was Japan. Mm-hmm. Because it would create those mental images that they could see. You know, I mean, in any case, the Vedic is, that's what the idea of example, the Upadana, is about, giving examples so that they can actually see it within the mind. Mm-hmm. So if the mind's so undeveloped that they can't even use that, then you can have external. So it's also paintings, all that have always been there in the Vedic, sculpting and all that. So it's not that it's necessarily a new thing. It's just that it was part of the, you could say, your tools. Now it may be more, more exclusively used tool. You know. But the point is, whatever they're doing now that they say works, you know, after a few years it'll be very different. So it's just whatever modes are running now, people say that's the only way it can be done. But the point is the modes are only there because people aren't interested in the Vedic. So as you use the Vedic, they get purified. They'll be able to function with that. You may need to use whatever the contemporary things to go along with it. But you also have to see is that, what's the effect? Okay, you make a video. Okay, people appreciate it. But from that appreciation, what's the effect? Are they favorable to Krishna consciousness? Do they take up Krishna consciousness? Do they take up any practice? Do they improve the quality of their life and understanding? If it was just that it was, you know, 5 minutes of nice entertainment, and they appreciate it, and that's where it is, then you can say is that, see, then they appreciate it. But the point is it's still not very effective, because how did it change their life? Does that make sense? So then you have to find, okay, you want to use that technique, but what will change their life? So,
yeah.
And then see how that works. You know. Because then, you know, there are ones who do work in these areas, but it's about that. You know, that they have these presentations and do all these different things with the idea to try to influence people's life. But the difficulty is if you're not using the primary aspect, then you're just functioning within the secondary, and you may give a nice presentation in the secondary, and someone else will give also a nice presentation that's different. So when you work in the secondary, it has unlimited permutations. But unless you connect it to the primary, it won't have any meaning. If they have the primary, then they can apply it themselves in their own secondary situations. But if you only deal with the secondary things, it's like, why is that important? Just like when Prabhu asked about serving devotees, is it spiritual and material? And ask him, why are you serving devotees? So the first immediate thing is what? Like, who thinks about that? So that's the whole thing. Then you have to think. You go back, because you're, what's the primary point? Where is it going to? So that's the thing that people just want to be able to go, be lulled into kind of what's going on. I think it mentions that when you're watching the television, that the brain waves that are functioning are the same ones when you're in deep sleep. In other words, nothing. You know, it's like you, that, you know, so when they say couch potato, it's actually quite, you know, accurate, yes. Yeah. I guess you'd have to, you'd even have to use a Vedic potato. You've seen Mati Alu?
Mati Alu?
You heard of Mati Alu? They use it in Puri and in the sabjis? It's like something that looks like it's a potato, but it's not a potato? Not a shakalu. Not that one either.
Yeah, shakalu.
Yeah, so it's something like that. You've seen the puri. It's something, it's cut like potatoes are cut, but it's not potato. So it's one potato is like 40 kilos.
Oh, I know that one.
Yeah, very big. Like that. So you'd have to have one of those, then put that on the couch. Then you kind of simulate it.
Looks like brain a bit, isn't it?
No. We're not talking about the smaller ones. That's old kachu.
Sorry.
That one looks more like the brain. It might, but they're bigger than that. They're whatever. If you've seen them locally here, you know, stacked up, those are probably old kachu. Yeah. Yeah, but when it would be, if you stack three of those up, you know, in two, that's one potato.
Like that.
Yeah.
The difficulty seems to be is when we deal with the primary, as you explained previously, the individual has to be very much involved in that thing. But dealing with the secondary, we don't have to. We just observe it. It just happens.
Right.
So even the kids nowadays, they put the tablet on or the smartphone, and everything happens for them there. They don't have to do any endeavor except for, you know,
push the right button.
And charge it. That's it. So with the adults, it's the same kind of difficulty. People want everything pre-cooked, ready. And they don't want to put any effort into that.
But that's the difficulty, is then they can't apply it in their life. They can't get to manana. So the point is they have to get to manana. It's just like medicine, the kids like to take medicine.
No.
And if they don't take the medicine,
then they're sick.
Yeah. So if they take the medicine, they get... So we're not saying that it's not going to be a problem. That's why it says mode of goodness is bitter in the beginning, sweet at the end. While the mode of passion is sweet in the beginning, bitter at the end. So it may be great now, but then when they grow up, you know, they get everything, they do everything they want and all that, then they grow up and get married, and then they can't function in a married life. You know, so then, yes, okay, they had, you know, how you say, when they should have been trained, they had 20 years of just doing whatever they want. But the problem is, now the next 25 years will be a problem. Because they cannot function. They can't think, they can't change their life. So that's the point, of going back to that faith point. People think, if I get involved in this and I get a benefit, that's all the farther they'll think, but what about everybody else? If you're working with everybody else and you're getting a benefit, then according to even the modern concept, shouldn't the others also be getting some benefit? It may be different from what you're getting, but they should be benefiting also. If everyone's here just for our benefit, how is that universal? How is that, you know, how you say, you know, where does the equity, fraternity, liberty, where does that come in? That's not part of that. That's just selfishness. So that's the thing, is it's not thought. So when you point that out, it's like, so people don't mind it being pointed out, but you have to make it available to them through examples and that, and if you have to use visuals or all that. But it can't be based on visuals. Because even you're working on visuals, the problem is like you said, up to date. Unless your visuals are up to date, like today, up to date. They're old, and especially the younger they are, you know, if it's like three-month-old style of visuals, it's like they won't catch their attention.
Yeah.
Like, you'll notice that, like, when we have our meetings, when the people that are 60-plus, they're still using the 1990s visual presentations, you know, the PowerPoint and this and that and all that. But it won't work for the young people at all, not at all. So the whole point is if you want to get into that, then you have to be so up to date. So if you're already working in that field, you use it for Krishna. But if you're not, why would you make the endeavor? You know, I'm saying we don't have where's the ability. That's the whole point of Varnashram. Work in the area of your ability. You know, it's like Silicon Valley is not made up of everybody that lives in that area. Silicon Valley is made up of the best in that field from all over the planet. You know, like say, in other words, in small print, read Asia. Why? Because in Asia, they still follow these old values. Family, respect of authority, all the things that the Westerners say that you can't do and it's not modern and all that. But then in their scenario, those that have that are way ahead of them. I mean, like way ahead. You know, it's not even funny how far ahead they are. You know, it's not like it's just a touch ahead, you know. How you say everyone else is doing 97 and they're getting, you know, 98, you know, 0.2. You know, it's the gap is huge. I saw someone was telling me, it was in Australia, that someone was saying about, you know, going to school. So I said, why don't you go now? He says, it's midterm, they won't take you. You have to start at the beginning of the term. So then the problem was that they had 6 months. What are they going to do with 6 months? Because they can't get too much into one thing, because after that they got to go to school like this, you know, like that. And so then, and that was the standard. It's that beginning of the year in September, you come into the university, and then you can go through the year. I think it was about 2 years later, I saw, advertised on the bus. You know, they had those big things on the side of the bus about coming in midterm. But the pictures of the students that were, you know, that they had that were attracting were all Asians. Like that. So they changed the rule just to get them. Because otherwise, if you don't take them, they'll go to a different university. And so they you know, so that's the thing, is that they're adjusting for them. They're making that facility. So that's the point, is because about their background, you'll see they have, they're closer to the Vedic culture, you know, in some ways, than whatever's being practiced in the, you know, in the first world. And so then that's the difference. So it does work. It's just that without faith, you won't have it. If you don't have faith, Krishna won't give it. That's the point. You don't want to have faith that the Vedic will work. Krishna, that's easy enough for Krishna to reign. But you want to have faith, and you put in that effort, then you'll have. And then you'll be able to understand it. Even though you don't know technically how it works, you understand it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's people who can cook. They're fabulous cooks, but they don't know the science of cooking as such that they can explain it or teach it. But they can, they're able to cook and do, and they know that this goes with this and all these things, and they're amazing. Does that make sense? You know, you find that in everything. You know, there's the guy that went through all the things, and then the guy just does it. You know, the music guys who went to the school and everything, the guys that just went out in their garage. You know, so, like, I think Mozart at 6 had not gone to school, but he was already the court musician. So, you know, it's so, yeah, good. Further ahead, the Sutrakar in Vedanta Sutra 3.2.11, Nastana Topi Parasya Syo Bhaya Lingam Sarvatra Hi, proves that there are not different forms, though they are in different places. Because the Lord can be everywhere by his inconceivable power, thus the one form can appear simultaneously. Yeah, so when you say he's here, he's there, it's all him. He's space also. So, yeah. Shri Govinda Bhasya. Siddhanta, the plural is figurative only. Gaurani. Why? Because it is impossible, asambhavat, to have many entities. because there are not many gods. There's only one God. The plural cannot be used to describe. The plural can be applied to him. Okay. The plural cannot be used to describe him. Still, the plural may be applied to him to refer to his many different manifestations. So that's the point. He's simultaneously plural and not plural. How do you say? Yes. The Lord is like a single Vaidurya gem, or like an actor. He peers as many. Shruti says, Ekam santam bahudha drishyamana. He is one, but appears to be many. Ekaneka surupaya. I offer respects to the Lord who is many. Right? To the Lord, the one who is many. I also have Eloheinu and Echad. So you have the Lord is one, but the Lord is many. Right? So it's there. It's universal. Though nowadays people don't really seem to understand it. But yes. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10:36. He, the personality of Godhead, manifests himself in a transcendental form, being the subject of his transcendental name, quality, pastimes, entourage, and transcendental variegatedness. Although he is unaffected by such activities, he appears to be so engaged. Right, so he's the subject of all these things, and so he appears in that form. But it's not that, oh, he doesn't have a form, he appears in a form. No, he has a form, and he according to who he's interacting with, then he will appear in that specific form. But the point is, the form's original. Right? Because if the form's not original, how do you get form from nothingness? That doesn't make sense. Footnote 3. Srila Prabhupada comments. Whenever there is a need of material creation, the transcendental personality of Godhead accepts forms in the material world for creation, maintenance, and destruction. One should be intelligent enough to know his activities in truth and not be biased to conclude that he descends to the material world by accepting a form created by material nature. Any form accepted from the material nature has its affection for everything done in the material world. Right? So whatever is taken from material nature has its natural affinity to material nature, and it will give results in that. But the point is the Lord's beyond that. So he may accept forms here, but he's beyond that. The conditioned soul who accepts a material form for undergoing a certain term of material activities is subjected to the laws of matter. But here in this verse, it is clearly stated that although the forms and activities of the Lord appear to be the same as those of a conditioned soul, they are supernatural and impossible for the conditioned soul. He, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always unaffected by such activities. In the Bhagavad Gita 4:14, the Lord says, Namam karmani limpanti name karma phale spriha iti mam yo bijanati kamrabhir na sabhadyate. The Lord is never affected by the activities which he apparently performs by his different incarnations and personalities, nor does he have any desire to achieve success by fruitive activities. The Lord is full by his different potencies of wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, and thus he has no reason for physical exertion like the conditioned soul. Therefore, an intelligent person who can distinguish between the transcendental activities of the Lord and the activities of the conditioned souls is also not bound by the reactions of activities. The Lord, as Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, conducts the three modes of material nature. From Vishnu is born Brahma, and from Brahma is born Shiva. Right? So from goodness, then goodness is just, passion is the activities of goodness with now a motive. Right? And then ignorance is where now you get your motive and actions backwards. So you see it's natural. From Vishnu comes Brahma, from Brahma comes Shiva. Sometimes Brahma is a separated part of Vishnu, and sometimes Brahma is Vishnu himself. Thus, Brahma creates the different species of life all over the universe. Which means that the Lord creates the whole manifestation either by himself or through the agency of his authorized deputies. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10:36. So again, the Chintabheda Veda Tattva, it all works very nicely. then with that you can then understand when you have qualities that are talking about the Lord, then the verse is seen in that context. You know? Does that make sense? Even though the words being used may seem different. Like here, sage or prana. But we see the qualities attributed to the sages and prana is the qualities of the Lord. So it's talking about the Lord. It's not talking about the material energy. It's not talking about the jiva.
In order to understand every aspect of the Vedic literature, we need to understand the position of Krishna.
Yes, we have to understand the position of Krishna.
If we don't understand, still we speculate.
Yes, we'll speculate. And, but the thing is, because it's so broad, we have to understand by approaching the scriptures and the previous authorities through our authority.
Yes.
Right? So we have the founder Acharya. Through the founder Acharya only do we approach the others. Right? Sutta 2.4.3. Tat prak shrutesh cha. Tat, that, prak, before. Shrute, from the shruti. From the shruti shastra, cha, and. And the plural is only figurative because before creation only the Lord existed according to shruti. Sutra Prakashika. Right, so you can say is that, no, but why doesn't it say directly? Why is it using this figurative?
Yes.
You know, because then it would be more clear. But then those who will argue that point, then we'll see is that something else that's clear and direct, they'll say is figurative. So in other words, it's just according to the philosophy. So you have the philosophy, then the presentation can either be direct or indirect. But it doesn't adjust the philosophy because you already know the philosophy. It's just giving different angles. Right? Sutra Prakashika. This sutra is to further lay emphasis on the single Lord existed before dissolution of the universe. Everything is amalgamated in Him. Earlier in Vedanta Sutra 129, Tata Chara Chara Grahanat. The sutrakar verified that the Lord is the eater because He devours all moving and non-moving entities. The sutrakar in his later composition in Vedanta Sutra 4.2.15-16, Tane Pare Tata Hyaha and Vibhago Vachanat, verifies on the basis of shrutis that fire, etc., all the senses, prana, and the elements merge completely into the Supreme Lord. So there's only Him. But all these aspects are Him, right? Either Himself as Vishnu or as His energy. So in that way, He is many. But He's one. Sri Govinda Bhasya. Siddhanta. There could be no objects during pralaya, prak. One cannot speculate that there were many entities existing then, since at that time everything was merged in the Lord. Therefore, the plural is figurative. Bhagavatam verse reference. 2:10-43-44. Thereafter, at the end of the millennium, the Lord Himself, in the form of Rudra, the Destroyer, will annihilate the complete creation as the wind dissipates the clouds. The great transcendentalists thus describe the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the pure devotees deserve to see more glorious things in transcendence beyond these features.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, this is the position. But for the devotees, the pure devotees, or it's about pure devotion, then they're not really worried about the secondary attributes. It's about the primary. They're using the secondary in connection to Krishna, so they deserve to see more. They see the Bhagavan features, His past name, form, qualities, and pastimes. The other ones, they see these aspects, but all in with His majesty, how He's God, how He's controlling everything. So generally in connection with the material world. Right? With the Purusha avatars. And if they go beyond that, then to Vaikuntha. Srila Prabhupada comments, this creation very appropriately compared to clouds. Clouds are created or situated in the sky, and when they are dissipated, they remain in the same sky without manifestation. Similarly, the whole creation is made by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His form of Brahma. It is maintained by Him in the form of Vishnu, and it is destroyed by Him in the form of Rudra or Shiva, all in due course. This creation, maintenance, and destruction are nicely explained in the Bhagavad Gita 8:19-20 as follows. Bhuta grama sa evayam and paras tasmat tu bhavo nyo. The nature of the material world is that it is first created very nicely, then it develops very nicely, and stays for a great number of years, even beyond the calculation of the greatest mathematician. But after that, it is again destroyed during the night of Brahma, without any resistance. And at the end of the night of Brahma, it is again manifested as a creation to follow the same principles of maintenance and destruction. The foolish conditioned soul who has taken this temporary world as a permanent settlement has to learn intelligently why such creation and destruction take place. The fruitive actors in the material world are very enthusiastic in the creation of big enterprises, big houses, big empires, big industries, and so many big, big things out of energy and ingredients supplied by the material agent of the Supreme Lord. With such resources and at the cost of valuable energy, the conditioned soul creates, satisfies his whims, but unwillingly has to depart from all his creations and enter into another phase of life to create again and again. To give hope to such foolish conditioned souls who waste their energy in this temporary material world, the Lord gives information that there is another nature, which is eternally existent without being occasionally created or destroyed, and that the conditioned soul can understand what he should do and how his valuable energy may be utilized. Instead of wasting his energy in matter, which is sure to be destroyed in due course by the Supreme Will, the conditioned soul should utilize his energy in the devotional service of the Lord so that he can be transferred to the other eternal nature where there is no birth, no death, no creation, no destruction, but permanent life instead, full of knowledge and unlimited bliss. The temporary creation is thus exhibited and destroyed just to give information to the conditioned soul who is attached to temporary things, right? Because we're attached to the material, not connected with Krishna. Therefore, the manifestation of the material world in its temporariness is a very important aspect. Because then you start to see is that you put your faith in something, it goes away. You commit yourself to something, it changes. You know, the whole environment changes. Everything changes. It just keeps adjusting. And so that one will start to ask, why is it like this? I want it to be eternal. It's not. So then you'll inquire. Then you'll learn about the actual eternal nature. Right? It is also meant to give him a chance for self-realization and not for sense gratification, which is the prime aim of all fruitive actors. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10:43. The Sutrakar gives another reason why the word prana should be interpreted as a name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sutra 2:4:4. Tat purva katvad vachana. Tat, that, purva katvat, because of being before, vachaha, speech. Before the creation of names and elements, only Brahman was present. Sutra Prakashika. Since before the creation everything is non-existent, except for the all-powerful Lord, it implies if at all any names such as prana and rishaya existed, then these would be the names of the Supreme Lord. Earlier it was proven in Vedanta Sutta 2:3:15, chara chara vyapashrayastu syat tad vyapadesho bhaktas tad bhava bhavitvat, that the Lord resides in all that moves and does not move. Therefore, we learn that every word is one of his names. Mm-hmm. So, if he's taking before, it's still him, because it's all him. It's all his qualities. He's the source of all this. He's the source of the rishis. He's the source of the prana. So it's actually prana. Yeah. Right? In some sense. It's like that. So the toaster is actually a manifestation of electricity. Because without that, it doesn't function. Sri Govinda Vasya, Siddhanta. The word vacha, right, you know, if you somehow or another could get your slice of bread out there, you know, where the lightning is, it would also get toasted. But you don't require that much potency of the Lord to toast your bread. Therefore, it comes in a much smaller manifestation. Right? You know, hence known as vibhuti. Right? Instead of swamsa. Yes?
No. But it is the Lord.
But it's the Lord. Yeah. Therefore, deal with your toaster properly.
No, is it not color?
Huh?
can only perform one of two actions?
Yes.
So that's the question.
Yes. Okay. Siddhanta, the word vacha, speech, here means the names of things other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of many spiritual potencies. This speech existed before the Pradhan, the Mahatattva, and the other features of the material world were created. Because the names and forms of the various material features were not yet created, and because the material senses also were not yet created, at that time in the beginning of creation, the word prana here must be used as the name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So if you're talking about speech being all those things other than the Supreme Lord, but in the beginning, he was, none of these were here, so it must mean it's about him. Right? Because he was there before. Taddedham tarhi avyaktam asit. In the beginning, they were not manifested. Only later were the material forms and names manifested. End quote. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 1.4.7. Before the creation, names and forms were absent. Therefore, the material senses arise like ether and other elements. So, but it doesn't mean the Lord and his form and activities weren't there. It just means the material forms weren't there. Right? So we're distinguishing between the material and spiritual. Bhagavatam verse reference, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.51. All living entities, moving and non-moving, are my expansions and are separate from me. I am the supersoul of all living entities who exist because I manifest them. I am the form of the transcendental vibrations like Omkara and Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, and I am the supreme absolute truth. These two forms of mine, namely, the transcendental sound and the eternal blissful spiritual form of the deity, are my eternal forms. They are not material. Footnote 5. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. You have understood about bhakti. Your verses of praise are the proof. I will now teach about jnana, in order that you become more indifferent to questioning. Good. So he said, become indifferent to questioning. So in other words, the question is about transcendental, rather than, so because we see is that there's questions that are about the secondary. We want to know the mechanics of the secondary. Because we've given an example of a secondary in relation to the primary to show the main point. But that catches our attention, and then we ask questions on that secondary and try to take it from there. So then here, by explaining jnana, then you understand how it's all Krishna. That means you'll see things in relation to the primary, not in relation to the secondary. Even though it's a secondary item, but you'll view it from the primary position. So to get rid of this need to ask all these wild questions that have no necessary relevance in Krishna consciousness, therefore the jnana is important. So, Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nityananda Gaura Premananda ki